the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to an episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBB Media Network. We're waiting, I think, for Joe Hall, Joe Nakamoto on Twitter, although he may be actually flying right now.
Well, I'm suspecting
him or something.
I know he's been traveling a lot, and I thought I saw a tweet today saying he'll be flying, and I could be wrong. I thought he was flying to UK, but maybe I misunderstood. It's been a very eventful day, to say the least. So many things going on, a lot of information to digest. So I could be forgiven to misinterpret one piece of information.
Yeah, Joe's been very busy. Len was telling me that there was a bit of a conflict today on stage in, what is it, LabConf over there right now? What's going on over there?
I think it was yesterday. And so Joe was the moderator, if I'm not mistaken. And he was on stage with Stacy from the Max and Stacy fame, and she went off on Joe for the fact that he is working for Cointelegraph, and it didn't seem like a very good exchange over there, and it put him in a very awkward state. And so later on, he posted on Twitter what his response was. He's full Bitcoin, obviously. Just because he's working for Cointelegraph, it doesn't mean much. He's just, you know, trying to earn a paycheck, and Max called him a cuck.
Not very nice. But if you look at Joe's his you know bibliography on Cointelegraph, the Bitcoin slant is undeniable. Okay, it's exactly what you expect to see. I'll pull it up on the screen here. If you look through his articles, like look what you're getting here. Does this look to you like a altcoin enrichment scam? FTX friendly, although there's one article here about FTX from October 7th. We'll ignore that.
Well, it may not be friendly for FTX, He could be talking about the ongoings over there, which has been
FTX and Visa partnered to permit crypto payments in 40 countries. I didn't know that.
They have since revoked that.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
Visa's been on the warpath and saying we're no longer going to be doing this for obvious reasons.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So, if he doesn't show up, that's okay. We understand. We got to do, we're doing two shows a week, Len. So, we got to talk about something.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything on your mind in particular we could discuss. Maybe we can talk about the quality of my haircut after wearing my hat, walking my dog earlier.
When did you get your haircut? That's the number one question I have for you.
I haven't had a haircut in a while. It's been like, a month probably. Maybe. How often do people get haircuts?
It's been months for me. I've been 6 months, I think, since I've cut my hair. I got to get a cut really soon. It's getting too darn long for me. Mm. And I do one thing that is on my mind. Mm-hmm. We could talk about it briefly
now. Hit me with it. Let's assume Joe is a no-show. I mean, we have to. That's what we do. We're the hosts. We're the content creators. So
yeah, we'll adapt.
We gotta create content here.
we'll be like water. We'll just keep flowing here. GBTC.
Oh man.
So there seems to be a lot of concern over there. Genesis is involved, and they are trying to raise $1 billion worth of capital, but for Monday, if I understand this correctly, and this is because there's a shortfall in the money. And if worse comes to worse, and I think a lot has to come to play for this to happen, they'll just eventually release the 600 and so K BTC to the market. Now, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but this is one potential outcome should everything line up correctly or incorrectly, depending how you look at it. So that could make massive downward pressure on the price of Bitcoin. So everybody, if you have some dry powder sitting on the side, who knows? You might be able to snag a bunch of Bitcoin. I say multiples if the price really goes down a lot.
It is going to be big, isn't it? Like the other thing I would, that you've been talking about on the Clips channel, or not the Clips channel, the mining update videos, is Silvergate. Silvergate is the Bitcoin and crypto bank. for a lot of these companies. They are involved in almost all these companies. And Brandon from Green Candle shared a good graphic that's been making the rounds on Twitter, this interwoven interdependency chart. Silvergate's in everything. And if Silvergate doesn't have deposits to back up its liabilities, they got a problem. And I don't know if they have that problem or not. Zero Hedge, to your point in the video about in the video you made, you should check that out, by the way, listener, viewer, if you haven't already on our YouTube channel. And the point you're making about them losing stock value, most of that value, Len, was because at the beginning of the quote-unquote FTX problem a couple of weeks ago, when people started to talk about this, and you know, maybe it started a little before, the initial inclination by the market was that the exposure between the two of them was FTX friendly. But it's not. It's actually Silvergate friendly. FTX and them had an inverse relationship to the other, you know, the other ones that we've seen kind of blow up over the last week or so. So I don't think the stock price ever recovered, though. And now
slightly, a bit.
And now Mark Cohodes, who is, you know, sort of making the rounds here, is the guy who's been famously trying to talk about a lot of the FTX characters, not only SBF and Carolyn, but others. You know, this guy's been talking about now Silvergate, saying the next, you know, really card to flip is going to be this institution. I don't know enough about Silvergate to know whether that's true or not. Maybe we can do some digging into that for Monday. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about on Monday night. But the thing I will say is, again, if you have another one of these monster contagion events, you know, we talked about the price action on Monday night, Len. Like, I think honestly, we're due for a four-digit price. It feels like it. It feels like there's still lingering contagion waiting to come through the pipeline here, and a lot of companies are doing their best to shore up as much as they can, get defensive as much as they can, you know, stop spending on these sorts of things as much as they can. But you know, as you've mentioned, as we've discussed offline, you can only protect user assets with your own funds for so long. Eventually, these other programs, like the yield programming and stuff like that, and some of these companies, BlockFi, great example, there's just no way to protect it, even if you have assets on hand to try, if it's a long period of time, a long downturn. So let's see. I personally, Len, like, I don't know. I think I was joking with Boomer, who's in the chat here, on maybe it's like early last week, about selling like my VFV position, like liquidating some of my TFSA to buy Bitcoin if it gets like any lower. I have a little bit of dry powder left, but I used a lot of it over the last, you know, 10 days or so. I'd have to find some money other places. I don't know about you. What do you think?
There's a lot of people that are in your same position. They bought in a lot in the past little while because there has been, up to date, a lot of buying opportunities, and we don't know what's going to happen moving forward. And to go back to Silvergate, that their stock price plummeted just a month ago, was sitting around $70. And now I'm looking at it right now, it closed today just a hair under $28. So that's a massive drawdown in just a 30-day period of time. And I'm looking at the 52-week low, and 52-week low is $26. So you know what? It didn't recover. When I made that comment, it was from yesterday's price when I made the video, because they were sitting around 30 yesterday. And yeah. It's just a steady drawdown on their price. And this is causing some issues for them. Is investors obviously have lost confidence in this company. And they have at least one $200 million line of credit that they have issued to Marathon. That's just one company that they have loaned out.
Is that right, Len? I didn't know that. Okay.
They loaned out $100 million initially. That was last year. Then Marathon, I think it was July of this year, doubled up their loan to $200 million. So that's one company that has a massive amount of exposure to Silvergate, and who knows what's going to happen with that. Marathon has been having some real problems plugging in their equipment and keeping it online. But not just them. Silvergate is one, but I also hypothesize that it could be that NYDIG might be one that could really bite the bullet here. And it's another bigger company, although it may not have as much exposure as Silvergate. They're not publicly traded. It's still going to have some really long-term impact to the price of Bitcoin and even the mining community as a whole, because they have lent out a considerable amount of money to a lot of different mining companies out there. And the companies that have borrowed money from NYDIG, they have used their equipment, the ASICs, as collateral. Now, that's problematic because at the time they entered into agreement and got the money from NYDIG, the equipment itself had decent amount of value. But since then, it has plummeted because the hash rate has gone up, mm-hmm. the price of Bitcoin has gone down, a number of different factors. So there has been some loans that were defaulted and the equipment was returned back to NYDIG. Now, NYDIG got the equipment, but unfortunately, the equipment is now used, so it's a little bit less valuable, and it's lost a lot of its value. So they're going to have to sell that on pennies on the dollar. How many times can they do this over and over again? This is not tens. This is hundreds of millions of dollars we're talking about. Eventually, they're going to run out of money. If this happens, oh, man, we're screwed.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like like I was saying to you before, I think like many Bitcoiners, thirsty for another washout. I would love to see really, really cheap Bitcoin. You know, we talk on the show, and like we're not overly connected in the space, but we talk to enough people and have enough people stick around after interviews to know that there's a lot going on behind the scenes that should make people bullish on Bitcoin. You know, even if we can't share it, there's you know, political moving parts in the political realm, moving parts in the energy realm, moving parts all over the place. And I don't know if everyone else feels this way. I think there's probably some people who are unsure and maybe are, you know, a little defensive or a little uncertain when the price, you know, really hits a downward slope. But this is a great opportunity. It really is. And we don't talk enough about that on the show. We talk a lot about the economy and stuff like that, obviously, which is important to Bitcoin as well. But the opportunities right now in the price of the asset are, I think, really unmatched. Don't forget, in 2017-18, during that big drawdown from 20,000 to 3,000, there was no Lightning Network build out. There was no nation state adoption. There was no, you know, mature industrial miner. All these things only came about in the last 3 years or so. And people at that time were, I think, more correct in their level of concern about whether this was long for this world, whether Bitcoin was long for this world or not. And because of the ICO stuff, and there was very clearly securities fraud issues that have since been prosecuted in some cases, by the way, it was difficult for people to think about whether or not they want to buy this thing and hang on to it. Certainly as the stock market also continued to pump, right? That was during an easy money period as well. And so there was a potential for you to lose out on stuff like that. Now, at least we have that working in our favor. All this to say that the idea that you should be fearful now, I think, is less rational than you may realize at the moment you're looking at the price chart, at the moment you open TradingView and see 10%, at the moment you open your ShakePay account and see it's dropped by $50, you know, or something like that. These feelings are real. They are almost tangible in some cases. You know, you feel your heart skip a beat, you feel your stomach sink a little bit, but you got to know in each and every similar case to this, as far as price action, Bitcoin has rebounded. If economic conditions continue to, or I shouldn't say continue to improve because they haven't really improved yet, but if they improve, if monetary conditions loosen, we start to see, you know, maybe not the printer. I don't want to use that meme all the time, but interest rates find a footing somewhere, you know, between 4% and 5%, let's say. You got to feel good about the likelihood that this thing rebounds. All the while, people are building on the network, privacy tools, speed tools, hardware, software, you name it. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on around Bitcoin, and I think we continue to siphon the best minds. These contagion events give us an opportunity not only to buy corn, but to attract new people, both to work on the hardware, to make content, and any manner of, you know, any number of other things as well. It's really an incredible opportunity for us as Bitcoiners. We got to take advantage of it. That's all there is to it.
This is the first time that Bitcoin is now going through a prolonged bear market since its inception. So what you're experiencing here, what we are all experiencing here, is unprecedented with respect to the price of Bitcoin, the pressures on it. And there's so many news stories out there that are impacting it, because we just saw what happened with BlockFi, with Voyager, with Luna, and we had FTX and Genesis just recently. And it just goes on and on and on. We never had anything like this in just a very short period of time. And then you throw on interest rates that you mentioned earlier. So the fear factor that's out there, I think there's some legitimacy to that, because there's nothing really to compare it to. I don't think this is going to be going down to the, you know, low single four digits. If we do get into, just my prediction, if we do get into four digits, it's probably just going to be the high eight or nine or something like that, but not much lower than that. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be scooping up Bitcoin as much as it goes on the market. But man, if Grayscale has to dump theirs, that's 600,000. That's going to be just monumental with respect to what's going to happen. That's
going to be
a landmark moment. And then that's going to have another impact. How does this impact something like MicroStrategy, where they have over 100,000 Bitcoin on their balance sheet, plus Michael Saylor as an individual has a whole bunch of Bitcoin in his balance sheet. Then you throw on Hut 8 and Marathon and other Bitcoin miners where they're holding on to high thousands, six, seven, 8,000 of Bitcoin on their balance sheet. They're going to have to dump it, I think. And then these companies are going to capitulate because they can't sustain the bottom line with a low price of Bitcoin. So it's just going to be disastrous, but still fun to watch.
The difference, we should mention, there's a difference between the trust, right? The Bitcoin trust, the BTCC tool, and GBTC. Now, I think you might be best equipped to explain this. I am not 100% sure on all the differences, but there's some differences between the two, right? Or is there not? BTCC is reassuring people all the assets are safe, everything's in good condition. Well, someone who listens to the show reached out to them, sent me the email. I showed it to you. They're in.
That's the purpose Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, it's purpose Bitcoin trust.
Yeah, that's a different animal than GBTC. Like GBTC is a trust, and it's not a spot Bitcoin, obviously, as opposed to the purpose. Now, I remember when purpose first came out. I think it was
April. It's like when we started the show, a little after we started the show.
Yeah, so April 2021, give or take. I'm maybe off by a month. At the time, at the inception that they did their ETF and it went live, there was insurance that they purchased that would cover should anything go wrong, because they had to put the keys somewhere else and just everything had to be done securely. And should everything go tits up, the insurance should have covered most, if not all, of the value that they have there. Now, since the value of Bitcoin has gone down significantly, the insurance should now more than cover what's in there. I'm not trying to say that this is what you want. I'm just saying that this provides a level of trust that you have in there. But I think I'm just hypothesizing here. If it were like they went tits up and then they had to use insurance to pay out their customers, the payout of insurance would be probably the date of when it went insolvent, and it would be in Canadian dollars. And if Bitcoin ripped during that period of time between it going insolvent to when you get paid out, you might be losing out because you're going to get paid in Canadian dollars at the time it was it went belly up. So not saying it's a good situation to be in. There's obviously some bad. It's just something to consider. I don't think that there's any issue with them whatsoever. It's really the trust that they have. How much trust you have with them keeping the keys. And the keys are in third party, from what I understand, that they're using somebody to do custodian of the Bitcoin, which makes sense. And if you trust it, it should be good. And I have faith in it.
This is the message that I think a lot of people need to hear right now. It's you have to position yourself so that you aren't losing sleep about assets on other platforms. And there's platforms that are more trustworthy than others, for sure, as we've seen. There's platforms that remain stable, as we've seen. There's platforms that have completely fallen apart and turned out to be, 6 month long Ponzi disasters, as we've seen as well. And at the end of the day, Len and I are talking about this stuff, making suggestions, never giving advice, of course. But, you got to think about how you're going to sleep at night. Bitcoin makes sense because it's supposed to give you some protection against a failing kind of, a failing fiat system. And I think it's clear that it's failing. The speed at which it's failing, up for debate maybe. What the next step is in the sort of process of this thing dying, up for debate. But at the end of the day, if Bitcoin isn't helping you sleep, you're doing Bitcoin incorrectly, I think. And that includes the way you're parking it. It's about hedging. And if you're hedging with risky vehicles at a position size that is uncomfortable for you, you got to really start thinking about that. That's an important thing to consider if you're a Bitcoiner. And we oftentimes, and we're guilty of this too, Len, I was drinking beers at the top in November 21 on the stream, And, you know, we were high-fiving about the price. But like we said before, the opportunities that we're being given now, both in terms of price and in terms of being able to build, they're I think unprecedented. The maturity of the network is as good as has ever been, as stable as it's ever been. And the minds contributing to Bitcoin are as bright and as young and as enthusiastic as they've ever been. And this is a really good opportunity for us to differentiate ourselves from the platforms that are nothing but casinos for fiat and ways for founders to get rich. I'm excited to see what the next few months looks like.
Yeah, and I just want to address something which Jay Pleb is saying about keeping your keys and you know, it ensures that you'll sleep better at night. And don't trust verify. With respect to ETFs, you could do as much verification as possible. When you're dealing with traditional finance, and you know, there's some level of trust, unfortunately, you're going to have to provide. So if you want to take advantage of these tax-efficient vehicles, unfortunately, you're going to have just a little bit of trust in the system that it's not going to disappear and take your money. So that's just the reality of it. But there's also, when you buy Bitcoin too, really, I'm going to use this argument, and there may be holes in it, but prove me wrong. When it comes to buying Bitcoin, even with that, there's some level of trust. You can't verify everything, because you're going to buy it from an exchange or even from somebody, but you have to trust that exchange or that somebody to provide you the Bitcoin. So there is somewhere along the way some trust. Eventually, you could take that out and put it in your wallet and keep the keys, and then you could verify it moving forward. But there's just, unfortunately, there's going to be some trust that has to be done somewhere along the line, and that's just the reality of it. And I just want to state one last thing with respect to the ETFs. Yeah. I don't think the trouble exists with them as the same with exchanges, where exchanges rehypothecate the Bitcoin or have exposure to other shitcoins . ETFs, they just buy the Bitcoin spot. You know, if more money comes into the ETF, they go out and buy more Bitcoin, and reverse. If money comes out, they sell the Bitcoin and go from there. So it's just basically, it's a Bitcoin holding. Nothing more, nothing less. It doesn't have to deal with anything else, and everything else that is just causing issues. If FTT disappears, well, Bitcoin remains, and it should stay in their trust as well, and wherever they have the keys.
Isn't the most obvious indicator that something is untrustworthy a native token? It seems to me that, like, the one thing, and we've kind of talked about it, we mentioned it in passing with, like, the FTX stuff, but, like, it seems to me the most obvious thing that should scare people is if you're dealing with a platform that has a native token, whether it's BNB, whether it's FTT, whether it's, like, whatever, right? It doesn't matter what it is. If it's got a native token, it's not for you. This is too risky. These guys are minting out of thin air. In Mark Jeftovich's Bomb Thrower monthly update, there's a graphic there from I can't remember the guy's name, Dirty Bubble Media, that we talked a little bit about on our show on Monday, and it's a great graphic about this, like, VC flywheel about tokenomics, about in-house token production. Anything that uses this vehicle to bootstrap, or to polish up the balance sheet, or to draw in VC money, or to draw in user funds, or to convince external people to buy the token based on, you know, some sort of nebulous idea of utility. This is a fraud. It's a fraud, and it's security, right? You know, it's funny, the guys on the Unhashed podcast were talking about this, or not Unhashed, it was on Marty's show, actually. We're talking about this, for example, removal of the unstaking date on the Ethereum website. Like, those guys, Len, are printing more Ethereum based on how much you stake on the network, sort of forced holding and driving the price up. I just want you to think for a second, okay? What would the price of Ethereum be right now if there wasn't staking locking up those funds? Is it possible that Ethereum is doing this on purpose? I mean, I don't want to step on Monday, because this is for sure going to come up on Monday's show, but, like, they're obviously fucking doing this on purpose. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is that the price of that token would be damn near zero in this scenario if all that staked ETH could go somewhere, but it can't. It's locked up. There's no date. There's no opportunity to remove it. And it doesn't seem that there's going to be one anytime soon. That the last time it was on the foundation's website, or the Ethereum website, it was 6 to 12 months. Now it's gone. So, you know, come on. What, like, if you can't figure out that these things that are minting their own token, including Ethereum now, which has moved to minting its own token via proof of stake, if you can't figure out it's a scam, like, you know, you deserve what's coming. You deserve what's coming. As Bitcoiners, we have, you know, I've said this before, we have some level of responsibility to people who are new to the space. But these other people, like the Bankless guys, you know, these other kind of clown show offshoot shitcoin podcasts that are promoting, like I don't want to rag on the Bankless guys too much, but I was listening today because they had what's his face on, the Kraken guy. What's his name?
Was it a tearful episode or was it?
No, there was no crying. These guys must have had some beef jerky today instead of oat milk. And so they had Jesse something on. I forget the guy's last name, but the Kraken CEO. And
Powell.
They're talking about, yeah, Jesse Powell. And they're talking about how we're going to rebuild trust in this ecosystem at the beginning when they're doing the intro for the show. And then they cut to the ads and it's all shit coins. It's nothing but garbage. It's like decentralized identity, decentralize this, buy this token, store this file with this token. Like they are so, they're either stupid or lying, those guys. And I think probably, you know, Ryan Adams and that other guy, I don't even know the guy's name, David, I guess. I don't know his last name, but like these people are jokes, man. They're clowns. They know they're ripping you off. They're doing it for sponsor dollars. And it's so unfortunate because if you go to Apple Podcasts, if you're a new entrant to the quote unquote crypto space, you go to Apple Podcasts looking for content, you type in crypto podcast, it's going to be their show that comes up first. Bankless is going to come up first every single time. You know, you might get something else. You might get like, you know, some other shitcoin show. You might get McCormick if you're lucky, but generally you're going to get Bankless. And as we know, people don't come to the space for hard money and, you know, hard money and Mises. They come for get rich and sushi swap yield. You know, I got to farm my token or whatever the fuck these guys are doing. So they get co-opted early and they take the word of this biggest podcast in the space. And, you know, there's a responsibility there. I don't know what to do about that. But like these guys got to be held to account. They can't go on crying about the space is not what it should be, blah, blah, blah. You're fucking part of the problem, man. You're part of the fucking problem. And you either know it or you don't. But in either case, you shouldn't be handed the keys to this thing. You shouldn't have the responsibility in the platform you do because it's just not good for anybody, including the shitcoin platforms, including them, which they don't seem to realize either.
The people that they're catering to are just there to increase their wealth quickly over a very short period of time. They're trying to buy in low and then sell it hopefully at a higher price. And in terms of what the project is and what it's trying to accomplish, it doesn't really matter for the users involved. It's how much they have at the end of their transaction. That's what really matters. And it kind of differs with Bitcoiners because how many Bitcoiners are looking to sell? They're trying to hoard as many as possible and see what happens in the future. Maybe transact with it on a much, much later date once the hyper Bitcoinization takes place. But until then, it's keep on hoarding Bitcoin. And so that's seems to be the MO with Bitcoiners. But I want to go back to ETH. We touched upon it a little bit. And with respect to the staking, you know, and then they took away their roadmap. And it was initially 6 to 12 months. And they changed it from 2023 to 2024. And as you mentioned, it's now gone. There's no end date or start date from when that's going to take place. It may be something that's purposely done, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I think it's because the complexity of removing the coins that are staked might be just, it takes so much time and so much code and overlooking of the code and making sure it's done right in order to make sure that once it's released, it's done properly. Because look how long it took for them to do from the transition from proof of work to proof of stake. That was a 5, 6, 7 year endeavor. So using that as kind of a guide, maybe it is very, very complex to do. And it's not just for them trying to not have the price of the token absolutely plummet once everybody has the opportunity to sell their stake deed. I think there just is complexities to it and they're just trying to work around it. But maybe they're working at a very, very slow too at the same time. So everything that's staked up is just a kind of a donation to the foundation because it's one coin or one token that's going to be lost and never sold. just my 2 cents.
It's absolutely brutal. So I'm looking at Brad Mills' Twitter account right now. He tweeted today, it's indefinitely locked. Gandalf is actually in there too. It's indefinitely locked in a validator contract. Ethereum holders left to wait for clarified information on when they can withdraw their staked ETH after eliminating the dates from Ethereum Foundation's official website. It's a joke. Like it is an absolute joke. You are getting completely hosed. And you know, by then, how many enforcement actions are going to come against Ethereum? Like, I would be, this is the other thing about SBF that we didn't really talk about last week because I didn't want to get tinfoil hat. But since I'm wearing a hat tonight and we don't have a guest, You know, like what are we talking about with the SEC and their relationship with SBF and like the willingness it seems for them to play ball with shitcoins while they attack Bitcoin constantly? Like, what the fuck is going on at those three letter agencies? This is allowed. This is like, this is a big time stupid or lying moment. And I got to tell you, Len, like, I think there's a lot of lying going on, a lot of deception, a lot of cons at that, you know, SEC level and adjacent agency level with Gensler and with others to try and be in on the fraud, but arm's length on the fraud, to enjoy the donations, but not, you know, not embrace the company after they go bankrupt and steal, you know, a few billion from their customers. It's just, all of it just rubs me the wrong way. And I know that there's talk, and I am guilty of this, talk of, you know, maybe opt out isn't the best slogan for Bitcoin, but what choice are we really giving people if, you know, this is the alternative? We got to play in this system where like Gary Gensler pretends he doesn't know anything about the SBF stuff. You know, we pretend he doesn't know anything about the shitcoin tokens, but then he makes like a publicity video on Twitter, has like his intern make a video about busting Kim Kardashian for Instagram posts about ICOs, and goes on a media parade when he, you know, is able to fine her $1 million. Kim Kardashian, you know, she keeps $1 million in the couch, buddy. Like, this stuff doesn't matter. He let this $8 billion cancer grow and spread for 3 years, knowing the mother, involved with the mother, involved with the father at MIT, involved with Carolyn at MIT and SBF at MIT. Like, what are we doing here? Are there really people out there who think that there's no connection to be made between any of this? There can't be. This is willful ignorance or just a blind sort of political allegiance to the ruling class. But in either case, again, when we tell people opt out is not the right slogan, it is getting harder and harder to convince them of that. And this stuff is difficult to argue with. Right, I would say rightfully so. You are right. This is an opt out moment for Bitcoiners.
A question I have, and I may be totally off base here, but what does the SEC or DOJ or whatever department have to deal with FTX or SBF? Because this FTX US, I could understand because that was on US soil, at least it operated on US soil. But FTX was in the Bahamas. SBF operated out of the Bahamas. What do they have to deal with this? Sure, it may have cost their citizens some money, but in terms of regulating or having him come to talk about what he's done with his company and everything, this was done on foreign soil. What do they have to do with anything? Like, it seems like they're overstretching their boundaries. Am I wrong with this?
It's hard to say. The corporate structure of FTX is an impossible to decipher spider web. I'm sure you've seen the graphic by now. You know, there's a million little rectangles on 8.5 by 11 size, you know, PDF, and it you know, there probably was some shell stuff going on and stuff that insulated FTX, I should say, from the US, you know, authorities vis-a-vis FTX US. But at the end of the day, Len, like, you know, this is the same country that's trying to put a cap on the price of Russian oil. They don't give a fuck about jurisdiction when it's convenient. And when it's inconvenient, they find a way to say, oh, well, there's nothing we could have done. Oh, well, there's nothing we saw. Or, oh, it's not our problem. Oh, it's not our battle to have. That's fucking bullshit. It's bullshit. You know, they protect their interests abroad when it's something they want to do. And they find ways to make it happen. They go to other countries. They draw on their alliances. They make sure that they have all the tools in place and all the vehicles ready to be deployed. And then when this happens, what do? Are they really going to plead jurisdictional ignorance? Like, they may, but again, like, it feels like the average IQ of the people who accept these messages is dropping every week. There's not enough people who are going to believe that Gary Gensler doesn't know what's going on, given his connection to the family, given his connection to MIT, and given that FTX operates on American soil. FTX US issued FTT as well. That's a security.
Right.
You're buying a security. And so, like, you can't tell me that they don't fucking know. Of course they fucking know. And all these American VCs that are for sure, you know, trying to tell the SEC, like, hey, you got a problem here. This guy is running a Ponzi scheme, or he's running an illegal security, or he's running a, you know, fraud of XYZ, you know, genre. these guys know, and it's very convenient for them to say something like, well, it's not our jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is just a big word they use when they don't want to do something. But when they want to do something, whether it's lock up a guy for tornado cash, for example, okay, I'm sure they had a hand in that. Whether it's go overseas and start busting people who are involved in Silk Road, whether it's try and put a price cap on Russian oil, whether it's, you know, you name it. There's a million other things over the last, 50 years they've done without concern about jurisdiction. This would have been another one if they wanted to do it. But the fact of the matter is they didn't. And so if people are in an opt-out mood, fuck it. Fuck it. That they earned that sentiment, I think, with this. And I don't know what I would say to a Bitcoiner who's like, oh, well, I don't really, I don't want to play in the system. Because normally I would say, we can make this work together. But, after this land, like, these people are so philosophically misaligned. They're such ideological mismatches from us that it's almost impossible to get along, it seems. It's getting harder and harder.
I just want to add to something that I mentioned earlier, that they're based out of the Bahamas, and I was questioning if they have the jurisdiction to do anything to SBF or FTX. From what I understand, and again, this is what I picked up recently, and I have to confirm this to be true. Initially, Alameda and FTX were operating out of Hong Kong, and then they moved to Singapore, and then they eventually settled on the Bahamas. So they were jurisdiction shopping for quite some time. They settled there for a particular reason. Maybe it gave them protection. Maybe it was because of tax breaks, maybe a combination of the two and stuff that I'm not even mentioning because I have no idea what the heck it's all about. But the reason that they've moved around to different jurisdictions, that's clear. So they're trying to find the most friendly that they could operate and potentially be skirting around the laws as much as possible. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. You're right. FTX US did issue FTT tokens, but the majority of this rug pull is a result of Alameda and FTX because there was an $8 billion hole right now. They have $9 billion of liabilities, $1 billion.
It's 8 or 12. I thought it went up to 12 at some point in the last few days, but
It's inflation. Everything is going up in price. Soon that's going to be 15%. $15 billion. But the reality is it's hard for me to put this into words. How evil of an individual could you be? And I'm looking at SBF. When you know the books, you understand what's going on. It's not like they had a large board of directors. From what I understand, they have nobody. So he was intimate with everything, all the financial knowledge and everything that's going on with his company. And he came on just hours before everything collapsed, and he said everything was all right. It's not like $7 billion or $8 billion disappeared within minutes. This happened over a long period of time. And he was the white and shining armor that was trying to buy up and prop up Voyager Digital, maybe I think was even BlockFi he was involved with in terms. And so he was using money that he was creating out of thin air, these FTT tokens. And this was going to be used to help prop up industries that failed. And this is going to ultimately increase his dollar value. It's incredible that he would do this. And how could he look himself in the mirror and sleep at night? And it's not like he double-crossed people that don't have much money. He double-crossed the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. I'm not going to say that they have goons out there, but BlackRock, man. I wouldn't sleep at night if I knew I double-crossed those guys because they're going to come break thumbs or maybe more. this is scary stuff for him, and he's got to be very careful moving forward.
I love it. I don't have anything else to say, buddy. I think I don't want to step on the Monday show too much. The problem when me and you get together without a script is that we just fucking bulldoze. We cannibalize the other content for 40 minutes. Now we're going to come up with 40 minutes of new material for Monday night.
Joey, the way things are transpiring in the world of FTX and everything else, by Monday show, we'll have 2 hours worth of just FTX material to talk about. But to be honest, there's stuff I'd like to rehash today too, because I want to do more of an in-depth look into this. Is what I've talked about today, it's just quickly what I read. I like to get a little bit more information before I talk about it. So stay tuned. Monday, I suspect it's going to be an FTX-filled show as well. Yeah. Unless something else collapses. I mean, Genesis looks like it's teetering on the verge of collapse, and who knows, something else. So many things are happening, and if GBTC falls as well, Fuck. That's going to be the only
thing we'll talk about. You'll be FSOL.
You know what? That's going to have a real problem with so many things. Right now, Peter Schiff was talking about the value that's in it. It's trading right now at, if Bitcoin was around 9,000 and change. And
It's like 45%, the discount.
It's the highest it's been huge. This year. I'm not sure if it's been higher in the past. I just only checked this year. But that's a huge discount that you're getting if you're buying into it. And it's easy for me to say, but what's to stop somebody with some really deep pockets to buy it all up, convert it into a private thing, and keep the Bitcoin for themselves? And you've done so at a 45% discount. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm hypothesizing. I could be totally wrong.
Mike Saylor, mad you just foiled his next big plan on air.
Well, how much is 600,000 times 16,000? Who has that type of money? Nobody. Apple even doesn't have that amount of cash. So it's, that's why I'm saying it's easy for me to say. But theoretically, if this was purchased by a group of people, companies, whatever, and converted to private, they kept it and that's it. Well, they bought Bitcoin at a 45% discount.
It's good if you can get it. Sorry, I'm just setting my fantasy lineup. I thought today was Wednesday. It's actually Thursday. So, you know,
go Joey's team, kick some ass.
My team's called Baby Got Backs, and I got another one called Cop in the Thiel for Adam Thielen. But anyway,
Don't know any of those references.
The GBTC thing, like, you know, Len, once upon a time when we were babies doing this show, I used to talk about how I thought GBTC was going to be the ETF because they had all the connections. They did all the homework. They had
everything. It still could happen. Don't discount that. It still could happen.
It doesn't look like it's going to. It doesn't. And I don't know. I don't know what the fix is for that. You know, what is it? Is it another, excuse me, sorry, I just finished dinner. Is it another company coming in and trying to, you know, snap up that Bitcoin, like you mentioned, a private individual? Do they release the Bitcoin back to the shareholders somehow? What do they do? I don't know. I have no idea. But it doesn't look like an ETF is coming anytime soon, especially not as the dollar, you know, as the sentiment around the dollar gets worse, you know? Like I can't imagine them adding fuel to that fire in a way that, you know, would just be the worst way to do it, wouldn't it? To let people escape the dollar vis-a-vis a tax-efficient vehicle, like that would just be, to me, it doesn't make sense. Just does not make sense for them to do it now.
I just did the math. It's $9.6 billion to convert 600,000 Bitcoin at $16,000 per Bitcoin. I'm just using some rough math here. And Apple, from what I could see earlier this year, was sitting at $200-plus billion in cash. I don't know if that's changed since earlier this year. It might have, it might not have. But, you know, theoretically, that's possible. In reality, I don't think so, because somebody's really going to have to convince their board and their shareholders and everybody else that this is a good move. But, I mean, a 45% discount. And you know what? I don't want to say that it's not out of the play. The thing you kept saying was it would be the first one to become an ETF, not to be converted, but the first spot Bitcoin ETF that's available in the United States. Still in play. Why not them? It could be very well a reality. Who the heck knows? But it's not going to be anytime soon, especially with Gensler at the helm there. As
maybe, well, it ain't going to be. It ain't going to be by Monday. That's for damn sure. So let's wrap it up. And thanks to Joe, who Ryan McLeod says is surfing on the beach right now. So I don't know, if I was surfing on the beach, I probably wouldn't come do this show either on a Thursday night in El Salvador. So yeah, there you go.
I don't know if it's chilly over there, Joey, but we've been getting a dusting of snow every morning.
We're supposed to get, it's supposed to be like 3 feet or 4 feet in Buffalo by Sunday. They're thinking about, the NFL's thinking about moving the Bills game to Cleveland on Sunday.
How could you? That's Buffalo. They play in all different sorts of weather.
No comment, buddy. No comment. Never would happen when we were kids.
They played the ice bowl in, what was it, like minus 20, minus 30 Celsius weather. And they finished the game there. And man, everything is getting soft these days. They played in the fog where you couldn't even see the game in the 80s, the fog bowl, they called that, between it was the Bears and I forget the Eagles. That was it. they played. Why are they doing this? The fuck, Buffalo? Come on, man.
I don't know. It doesn't. I mean, I football is. I'll watch football on Sunday when we're done this. I'm gonna go back to playing God of War, which I've really been enjoying. So anyway, God bless you, everyone. Thanks for coming, Joe. Joe Nakamoto, you were a great interview. We'll talk to everybody on Monday. Oh, actually, hey, you know what? Okay, so two things. One, Spaces tomorrow 4:30 should be good. Should be, you know, a decent showing. And I'm going on Money Talks tomorrow with Mike Campbell.
Yes, yes.
Not live, but look for that. We're going to talk about FTX and the future of crypto. I'll see if I can steer them toward a different asset, toward Bitcoin instead of crypto. But let's see. We like Mike, friend of the show. So looking forward to that very much.
If you don't orange pill him by the end of the show, it's you fail.
It's an uphill battle. Yeah. Uphill battle. I got about 15 or 20 minutes with him. So we'll see how it goes.
So what are you going to talk for the other 18 minutes after you orange pill him? That's the real question. So anyways, yeah, thank you very much for showing up. And yeah, this is great. And see y'all Monday.
Way to go. Good job.